Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Wow, I was going through my Skype and attempting to ring in our international participants as I generally do, and it seems many of our international participants somehow are not in my contacts. I'm having to re-add them to my contacts for some peculiar reason. This happened on Thursday when we were attempting to do, or we broadcasted Workplace Racism, and I was attempting to add Stacy. She's in London, and she's been joining us for Workplace Racism for, I think, about 2 years or so. And I try to call her to get her on the line. I attempted to call her on Thursday, and it was the same thing. I had to send the whole new contact request to add her back. And then I went this week to do Workplace Race, or excuse me, our Global Sunday Talk on Racism, and lots and lots of the participants not being in my contacts. Very, very peculiar. Very much throwing off the broadcast and racist interference, regular within the system of racism, white supremacy. And it's so peculiar because it's not like I can see, like, if people that are familiar with Skype, you can see, like, your contacts, you can see your history. So I can see all these other folks that I have contacted. Contacts are right there as it normally would be set up, no issues. And, yeah, this all of a sudden, missing contacts, lots and lots of missing contacts. Very, very, very strange, very, very strange. But that is a system of white supremacy. If it's too much of a disruption, we might have to wait and get everybody on for the broadcast next week if I'm not able to, let's see. Yeah, if it's going to be too difficult, might have to postpone, but they are making it very, very hard. Let me see if I can get everyone together. I will take a quick commercial break and see if I can get everyone recontacted and all that. If it's going to be too much of an effort and take too long, then we will just make an effort to do it again next week. But that is the system of race. And white supremacy, you can always expect interference and unnecessary difficulties. That is, I've been using Skype for a decade. The entire time that we've been doing the cows, I've been using Skype, and I cannot recall a time in that decade where my people that I have been contacting for years, in some cases, I'm having to send contact requests, like a friend request type thing again, so that, you know, I can do a conference call type thing with them. No easy victories. No easy victories. I've said that the whole time we've been on. I will take a quick commercial pause and see if I can reorganize, and we will try again, context of white supremacy.
They're trying to solve the race problem. It takes a lot of time and energy and a lot of high power thinking to do something constructive along those lines. But what we do is just trying to upstage each other. We try to do when we do everything. It's called showing off. It's one of the show-offisms, trying to show how much we know to each other. We're not sure, trying to show it to the rest of the world. So if they can see through it, we don't know much of anything. That's why we're in the shape we're in. But we love to show off to each other, which is why I say you never should see a black person celebrating anything. We're not qualified. Never. I don't care what it is. We have no cause for celebration. But you take even the football players. I mean, you know, the white people know it so much about us that they, you know, make restrictions on it about the football game, even though people say it's just a game and all like that. But they are saying, you know, that it sends even a deeper message. It goes to show you how primitive we are. Because the black guy, like I saw a black guy do that, a ball player, I forgot what team he's on. That was this year. I think I may have mentioned it to you before. I mentioned it to somebody. He's running down the field with his weaves and whatnot. I mean, trailing behind him. You know. I mean, I was struggling to be a man. Just so, you know, struggling to be recognized. That's what the weaves are all about. Pay attention to me. That's what that is. Drop what you're doing and stop what you're doing and look over here and pay attention to me. So now when he's carrying a football down the field, and he was making it, he was outrunning everybody. And when he got near the end of the goal line, people were, he could see the people jumping up and down, the ladies in their skirts and whatnot, the pep squad and whatnot, the cheering squad, they jumping up and down. I mean, and, oh, he's grinning and running. And he ran into the end zone. And ran out of the end zone, I mean, and jumped right into the crowd up there, like we do. But he threw the ball down before he got in the end zone. And the people were screaming and yelling, I mean, you idiot and whatnot, and he's still running and grinning. Because he wasn't aware that he threw the ball down. Mm-hmm. And that's the story of black people's lives in the modern day. Since they took the chains off. Too quick to celebrate and haven't done nothing but drop the ball. In fact, threw it down. Concentrating on a celebration more than the accomplishment. And that's the story of our lives.
Wow.
Now, I saw that. I had given a description of that type of thing long before it happened, but this year it happened. I said, black people, we're the cheeringest people, we're the paradingest people. We want to take up the entire sidewalk so that everybody will see us more than anybody on earth, not to be doing nothing that warrants any attention at all. And we need to look at ourselves and say, hey, no more of this. Let the white people cheer. They got something to cheer about. We ain't cheering about nothing. We're in a pitiful state. In fact, we haven't even gotten started. We're not even at the starting line. Not to say nothing about it. We're not even in the stadium.
Context of white supremacy. So I went about the business of re-adding contacts. As we were listening to Mr. Fuller, let's see, system of racism, white supremacy. Expect no easy victories. I was excited as well. There were a number of, significant events. Significant events, that's how I'll phrase it, that I was looking forward to discussing with our international listeners, some of them relating exactly to very topics that we've been talking about on the program. Let's see. I just thought the call, let me make, try that again. See, I thought the call went through. I will take one more pause. Thank you for your patience to make sure I have got my contact added back correctly, and we will try it again. One more second, context to white supremacy. We'll be right back.
Got another term on there, VGQ. What does that mean? Victims Guarantee Qualification. Now, that keeps you from getting into arguments with other black people, particularly on television, which I get sick of that. Black people shouting, you know, we get into our ghetto thing once we get on television and get wound up, and we start all yelling at once. And the racists sit there smugly and just look. They watch the tennis match, so to speak, right? And black people are shouting each other down, talking about, you don't know what you're talking about, and so and so and so and so, and we go into our Amos and Andy and Sapphire Act. Okay. VGQ means Victims Guaranteed Qualification. Guaranteed qualification to do what? To give your opinion on anything about race. Don't care what it is. If you're on there with Minister Farrakhan, or you're on there with Mike Tyson, or you're on there with Miss, what's her name, Williams, the lady that had him put in, you know, recommended that he be put in jail, or you on there with anybody. So you don't cut the other black person down. Now, I don't even like that term, brother and sister, even though it's been around for about 30 years. But I ain't going to talk about the brother here. And, you know, no. See, we haven't reached that stage where we can do that. See, we got to crawl before we walk, but we don't miss any steps. Don't say you are what you're not. Don't say you feel something that you don't really feel. You don't really feel that he's a brother. I usually use the expression, I don't like anybody in here. I say that to all audiences. I haven't been taught to like anybody. I've been taught to dislike people. I've been taught that. And then they're taught to dislike me, so it's just compounded disliking. I haven't even got to love yet. All right. So what we do is minimize conflict, try not to hurt each other. So a certain thing, that's what a code is for. It's a stopgap. It keeps me from saying something against you. You say, well, don't you agree with what this person just said down here on the other end and whatnot? That person has VGQ, Mr. Donahue. I keep using him because he's one of the most prominent TV people, right? But the main thing you do is try to stay off of a radio program or TV program or even a neighborhood stage program, you might say, where you spend your time shouting back and forth at other black people. Nothing is getting done there. And when it's done on television, a lot of black people just get up from the TV set and go on in the kitchen somewhere once that shouting starts. Yeah, they get disgusted. Say, you know, they say, oh, here we go. They started off okay, but now they're doing a job on each other, and I don't even want to hear it. So just don't do it. And you cut it off. The cutoff point is that person has Victims Guaranteed Qualification. You spell it out what it means, meaning the person can say anything about race that they want to, and I can say anything about it that I want to. You are guaranteed that. You earn that as a victim. Simply by being a victim. Now, if a white person says something, that's something else.
Context of white supremacy. Woo! Still working here. Let's see if I at least got one of my new contact requests. And even with some of this, with the disruption, some of our international listeners had to get multiple Skype accounts, then having to figure out which Skype account is the one that works, and all of that. The zaniness of technology in the system of white supremacy. I think we at least got Andrew with us. Andrew, are you with us, sir?
Hi, Gus. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. We can hear you.
Great stuff. Good. Yeah, glad to be with everybody this evening.
For sure. I was telling listeners I had my Skype contacts. For some reason, everybody got uncontacted. And to do a call, you have to be it's like being friends. You have to be contacts with the person. So I was not able to contact anyone. I had to go and do new contacts and figure out the correct handles for everyone. Just caused a lot of confusion as I've been trying to go back and reconnect with all the folks that I'm trying to call. So you are the first successful breakthrough that I've had.
That sounds like a lot of hassle.
It has been. It has been very, very unpleasant. I was telling folks that I should have figured something was awry on Thursday. Stacy, who's right where you are, she was normally participates in workplace racism, and the same thing happened. I kept trying to call, and I couldn't figure it out. And I had to send her a new contact request, and I just, you know, thought that was bizarre. We added and moved forward. I did not pause to see if that was a widespread issue, which it seems to be. All of that said, I was telling listeners with all of the disruption, might see if you just do it again next week and have a little test run to make sure that all of the contacts are back and I can do my call. Incidentally, while I'm pondering just that, are you familiar with Jaden Moody?
Jaden Moody.
Yes, sir.
I've never heard the name. Who is he?
This was a black male. He was 14 years old. He was killed in London within the past couple days, week or so. And it got a lot of attention. It was on the BBC and Voice Online, blah, blah, blah. I was reading it and I wanted to talk about it because so much of it reminded me of Dr. Curry's work in The Man Not, like they did the same thing that they always do anywhere in the world. And they went and found all these pictures there. Oh, he's posing with gang signs and oh, look at the, you know, rowdy young Negro.
Oh, sorry. Right. Okay. So you're talking about it's the case of the young guy who came from, I think it's, up near Midlands, but up near Bedford, Northampton, I think, who's come down to live in London, and there was some incident and he died. I'm trying to that was the week before last that happened. Sorry about that. Yeah, I'm sure it's the same. I'm sure it's the same case.
He was hit off his moped.
Yes, that was it. Yeah, that was the one. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I didn't realize that we're talking about the same. It's that young man there. Yeah, it's the whole thing about him. He's a young guy. I think he's under 14. 16 anyway. 14 years old. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so he was on a moped. I don't know if it was his or not. Bearing in mind that in the UK anyway, legally speaking, you can't be on a moped under 16. I mean, when I was 16, I got what we call a provisional license, which is not a full driver's license, not a motorbike license, not a full driver's license, but you can only get that and ride a moped legally at 16 years old. So now this young man, so I'll be honest with you, right? You know, when we were 16, the first thing we did, which was a long time ago, the first thing we did was run out, get a provisional license, buy a moped, and then we used to ride them all around London. To be honest with you, just causing havoc. You know, that's what we did when we were 16, 17 years old. And there would be like 20 of us literally on mopeds. We call them mopeds, scooters. It's all the same thing, right? Just riding around London, being silly young men. That is what we did. That's what I did. So the first thing I asked was, how come he's 14 on... Sorry, but you got to ask the question. And I've not heard anybody come and tell me yet. And I'd like someone to tell me to make it make sense in my head. What is such a young guy doing on a moped anyway? You know, that's number one for me. Number two, I'm not sure. It's not been made clear to me yet the circumstances under how he died. I know that, as I understand it, some guys got out of a car and then stabbed him up, or unless I got that incorrect. He's come down from Northampton, I think it is, to live in London. I would like to know why he's come down from Northampton to live in London. You know, as a school teacher and as someone who has mentored a young lady who's moved down from Pimlico in London down to the South Coast, I know that local authorities move children around to get them away from a dodgy situation. Does that make sense? So in other words, they move you out of the area. This is what the government does. They move you out of the area to get you away from it. I'm not saying that's what happened in this circumstance. I would like to know the absolute circumstances under why this young person was moved away. It might be legit. It might be just come down there to be with family, or it might be the other circumstances. I'd like to know what those circumstances are. You know, the government, you know, and I heard the, I think it was the father on television saying, my son wasn't in a gang. You know, that's fine. You know, I mean, to jump to, if it was a white kid, nobody would jump to any conclusions. There would be no discussion around that white kid being in a gang, you know, and that's true. But we are living in a racist country. We need to expect white people to be racist, full stop. Right, that's just a fact, right? But put that aside now. I would like to know why, you know, what the circumstances were for him coming down, right? And I would like to know why he was on a moped. I would like to know that. And but you know, regardless of all of that, right? That's no excuse for him to for any young person to get killed by another group of people, another group of men or young men or whoever that group was. I mean, that's just insane. So, and to my knowledge, I've heard nothing of the police finding the people that are having any, unless I'm incorrect, or having any leads on the people that committed that murder anyway. You know, so there's, you know, there's a lot of questions there. You know, to be honest, the biggest question is, what has the police done to find the people that did it? That's the biggest question. Do you know what I mean? You know, he might be a young kid just riding a moped illegally. So what? I mean, kids do that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? That happens wherever you are. What has the police done to find the murderers? You know, that's the question. I've not heard anything around that. Maybe you have in America, but I've heard nothing around that whatsoever. If this kid was white, right, there would be loads. You know, they would have found them already. So. You know, so I don't know. Maybe somebody might know something about their police investigation.
That's what I wanted to talk about with our other listeners, investors around the globe, with this case specifically, because there was a great report. Importance of black journalists. Try to emphasize that all the time. Try to emphasize and demonstrate that in my own conduct and work here at the Cows and writings and everything, really. But the importance, global importance of black journalists. But I learned about this at The Voice. That's an online publication. Yep. Covers a lot of information in the UK, London, by black people, written by black people. And the report, this is Dotun Adebayo. This report is from yesterday, just this weekend, hot off the presses. And it's called A Crime of Color. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just a little bit of what he touches on. He says, it is tragic. A 14-year-old boy is brutally murdered on the streets of London. And even though the police have not released a photograph or description, you just know it's a black boy. They do have photos of Jaden Moody. Anyway, there are always some clues as to the race of the victim, albeit mostly inconclusive. The fact that this child was stabbed may be a hint, but it is not definitive. After all, though teenage black boys are more likely to be stabbed on our streets, it is not unheard of that the teenage white boys are stabbed to death, too. Pause again. That's why I said the man, not race, class, genre, and the dilemmas of black manhood. That's why I said it reminded me of. Continuing. It's in the police statement that you find a racial nudge, nudge, wink, wink, disclosure. And so it was when I reported last week on the murder of 14-year-old Jaden Moody in East London. Firstly, my sincere condolences to his family. We can only imagine what they are going through now. The last thing I want is to cause them any distress. Unlike so much of the press coverage of this case, this is not about Jaden, but about police protocol. Police eventually confirmed his identity almost 24 hours after the boy was knocked off the moped he was riding by a car from which emerged his murderers, who proceeded to stab him multiple times as he lay unconscious on the road. Like I say, by then I had studied the clues and come to the conclusion that here was an incident that would rock our community to the core, because things will never be the same again. Our community, in which 14-year-olds were always treasured no matter how out of order they got, has with this murder gone forever. Now every parent of a 14-year-old black boy will reflect every time their child steps out of the house that there are people out there who are so heartless they are prepared to take the life of a child in the brutal and senseless way that Jaden lost his life. And as details of this despicable crime emerge and vignettes in the life of the victim are made public, some will deflect consideration of the criminals and reassure themselves that it could never happen to their child, because their child would not be riding a moped underage. Their child would not be excluded from school. And crucially, their child doesn't live in them ends. Once upon a time, the ends was a big clue to the race of the victim. And it is tragic. A man in his 50s brutally murdered on a train in Surrey. Now, he's talking about a different case here. On his journey to London to spend some quality time with his son the day before his birthday. By the time a photograph of the victim is in the press, people had already drawn their conclusion from a combination of the biographical and geographical. I didn't know for sure, but the likelihood was that the victim was a white man. Lee Pomeroy's death is also shocking. I cannot say more because somebody has been charged with his murder. But in the day or two before that arrest, we got to learn that Lee Pomeroy was an honorable man who had been stabbed after an altercation with a black man. I do not for one second doubt how honorable he was, and like you, my sincere condolences go out to his family. But even if a photograph of the victim had never been released and no biographical information had been made public, I would have still concluded that Lee Pomeroy was a white man. You see, there is one glaring statistic that seems to define street crime, and particularly street murders, specifically stabbings. How can you tell whether a victim is black or white? Read the bottom of the police statement. Within a short time of the murder of Lee Pomeroy, the police had issued a description of the man they were looking for. Around 48 hours later, they had someone in custody. In the case of Jaden Moody, the bottom of the police statement in connection with his murder concluded that no arrests had been made and that the police were appealing for information. Time and time again, the murder of black boys on the streets of Britain are defined by lack of information and the absence of an arrest. At least in the short term, it is no longer surprising to the police that they have no leads to go on when a black boy is murdered. It may even be the expectation, again, pause, the man not, race, class, genre, and the dilemmas of black manhood. That right there could be the thesis for the whole book, except the book is mostly talking about the U.S. And though I know the police are as keen to put the perpetrators of the stabbings of young black boys behind bars, cops have kids that they want to protect too and don't want these murderers roaming our streets any more than the rest of us do. They have to be careful that they do not become complacent when it comes to expecting to not be able to make a swift arrest. I will stop there. I will just say that VGQ, great article, Mr. Adebayo. I will only say that because of Stephen Lawrence, this is not the first time that I'm reading about a black boy in London being stabbed to death and left to die in the streets. Not the first time I've heard about that at all. And there is evidence. They call it the McPherson Report. Lots of evidence that, no, sometimes if it's a black boy, the police do not care. If there are murderers who go out stabbing children, they do not care. If they are white and they are killing black children, who cares? Same thing Dr. Curry said, it'll just be another dead nigger in the street. And moving forward, that's why that we talked to Stephen Lawrence's mother repeatedly on the program, read her book, all of that. So I do not agree with that portion, but most of what he's talking about in the report, absolutely, that is the system of racism, white supremacy, and the total lack of value for black life. I think they did say that the most recent reports that I've seen, they have five suspects, I think, that they said they were working on. I don't know if they've made any arrests in the case. They have charged someone. That just in the last 24 hours, an 18-year-old man has been charged with the murder of 14-year-old Jaden Moody. So you do have, and the person charged, Oyeb Majulin, hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, but it seems he has been charged. They do not have a photograph of the person who has been arrested and charged with the murder, but that's just in the last 24 hours. So any additional thoughts, Andrew, on the report or that at least one person has been arrested?
Yeah, just a couple of things, really. One, Dr. Adebayo does, as you probably know, he does a Sunday night show. Actually, the Sunday night show he does is from 8 to 10 while this show is happening, and that's on BBC Radio London. He's been writing for The Voice for a long time. I just want to, as I understand it, well, who owns The Voice is not probably not that important. The name that I got from what you just said, I think is it Ayo, which is an African name, Ayo or Io, that's an African name. So, it doesn't surprise me that it's necessarily a lot of young black people doing this. Does it give an age, Gus, of that young man who was arrested for?
18.
18, okay. So it's a lot of young, it sounds as if, it's a lot of young black African Caribbean boys that jumped out and did this. Although obviously, I think the initial report was of three young men doing damage to this young man, or who they pulled off the moped. So it'd be interesting to see what the other nationalities are. This whole thing, it's good that they've made some arrests. They're doing their job if that's what they've done. If they've got the right people, brilliant. We're living in a racist society, right? You've got young black African Caribbean boys running around doing this stuff to each other, and it's been happening for a long time. I keep saying this to people, it's not new, and people are very shocked and surprised when I say that, just because it's been reported in white media now. So what about 35 years ago when I was a kid? What about 40 years ago? I saw all this 40 years ago. I'll be honest, I'm 50. I saw all this 40 years ago, 30 years ago. I've been seeing it for years. Why is the government reporting all this now? Why is this hitting the media now? Why not then? Because it wasn't being reported then. So what's the issue? Why is it being reported now? What's the big difference now as opposed to 30, 40 years ago when I used to see it with my own eyes? You know, I do ask that question. I don't get any answers back, right? If indeed they're arresting the right people now for this crime, great. I have no issue with that. You may not know this, Gus. In this country, what's been happening, and I used to be a youth worker before I became a teacher, but what's been happening over the last 15, 16, 17 years in the UK is successive governments have been taking money out of youth services, right? So all of the youth clubs are shut down, or most of them are gone. A lot of the youth provision that used to be available for this, for that generation, have disappeared, right? So what do you expect? You know, what do you expect? You know, if you're not going to show that you value young people, particularly young people that live in inner city areas, if you're not going to show that you value these young people, they are going to run around acting crazy, right? And it's always been like that. And I'm going to say this, it's going to get worse. And I personally believe the government, they know it. Because if I'm sitting here saying this to you, the government would have done all of their research, and their answer, I believe, is going to be to build more prisons, not build youth services, which is what they should do. Their answer is going to be to build places to lock young people up. That's going to be their answer. It's great that they've arrested, that they're making arrests. Hopefully they're going to put the right people behind bars, right? Hopefully, and not just some black faces, right? But I believe it's going to get a lot worse because they're not investing in young people. And I don't expect them to. In my opinion, what we need to do as African people, African heritage people, we need to know they're not going to invest in our people, in our young people, and we need to do that investing. Do you get what I mean? You know, we need to do that investing. That's my take on it. It's going to get worse unless we do whatever we can amongst ourselves to deal with our young people. You know, because the government, the writing's on the wall, they've taken money out of youth services. They've done that, and they've done it for 15, 16, 17 years from the time that I used to be a youth worker and work with young people like this. And we used to be young people like this. You know, that's who we used to be. That's who the people I used to hang about with used to be, to be quite honest with you, you know. I'm still alive, thank God, you know. And I've not been to prison. I'm not mad. Do you get what I mean? I've never been on drugs, but a lot of my peer group have, you know what I mean? So, you know, some of them are still with us, others are not, you know, and, you know, that's my take on the whole thing.
Context of white supremacy, not so speedy there, dear Andrew. We'll be the judge of whether or not you are mad or not. I will say that with Mr. Everything that was just laid out about Jaden Moody, that could be applied to right here in the U.S. or Brazil or anywhere else, Canada, anywhere else in the world where black people reside, and specifically the taking away of funds from youth programs and resource centers and that sort of thing. Very, very similar. We've heard that before, and I also would not be surprised. Some of that could have even been connected to, or I heard similar sentiments at least, and then also could have been connected to the so-called London riots 2011, when they had another young black male killed in the streets, yep. Which started all of that. But I'm very certain that I heard people saying that then, that you had lots of young people who were upset. They've been taking money. And this was 2011. So if you've had that for a whole decade of resources being taken away and austerity and we don't have money and that sort of thing. I mean, you know, Mr. Fuller, he says monsters and monstrosities. That's what you can expect in the system of white supremacy. And then I can connect that to the man knot. We set up a system where we can predict that we will have black males to label as hooligans and thugs, and then we'll feel justified and proud when we go out to kill them in the streets. Maybe we find their killer. Maybe we don't. Another dead nigger, potential rapist. And they did the exact same thing with Mark Duggan in 2011. That was Signature Cal's coverage. They had lots and lots and lots of photos of him putting up gang photos. I think they even had one of him holding a gun. And, oh, what a thug and a criminal. And, ah, another hoodlum. Good riddance. Good riddance. Mark Duggan, 2011. This week we also did have lots of commentary on Brexit. Theresa May survived a no-confidence vote. You did think Theresa May was going to get the boot. Were you surprised that she survived the no-confidence vote this week?
That's been hilarious to watch. I've got to say, that's been comedy. God, what can you say about that? Okay, so I don't know where to start with that nonsense. Okay, so two things happened there, right? So the Houses of Commons here, you know, MPs here resoundingly rejected her deal that she brought back from the, from the EU. The whole world knew that was going to happen. Theresa May knew that was going to happen. It was just about damage limitation. But that's all that was about. The second vote, which is the one you refer to, was also a foregone conclusion that she was going to survive the vote of no confidence. Because for a couple of reasons. Number one, if they, and that was, a Labour thing that they put forward, the vote of, that's what that vote of no confidence was. You know, that was about the opposition putting that forward. Now, there's no way on earth that the Tories would have went for that, because then that would have been a general election, and possibly it would have meant that, the Tories out of power. So Theresa May was always going to survive that. It's that simple, But does that mean that the that Tories, backbenchers and all the rest of it, does that mean that the Tory, rank and file Tory members and Tory MPs support Theresa May? Well, the answer is no, they don't. And the previous vote, the previous Brexit vote tells us that. So what does it mean? Well, they want to remain in power. That's why they, that's why they voted down the, the vote of no confidence. It's as simple as that. The important thing is now is that Theresa May's got to go off, try and get another deal. She's trying to get some sort of a working consensus with Labour, which is not going to happen, right? So effectively, it's going to be brought back to the Houses of Commons. It's going to get voted down again, right? And then that's going to be the interesting thing. This is all, so in other words, what we're talking about is politics, things that have to happen. Things have to happen in a certain way and go down a certain path, right? But the path for Theresa May is narrowing. That's what's going on. The next vote is going to be a no. And then what has to happen is either this country leaves with no deal, and that's going to be crazy, to put it mildly, because anyone that knows anything about economics, if you've got no deals at all with your trading partners, if you've got no basis under which you're going to trade, right, then how are you going to trade? You're going to be making it up on the fly. That's what you're going to be doing, right? Every lorry that goes to Europe has got to be negotiated, right? Every single, you can't do business like that, right? So it's going to be nuts. That's what it's going to be. So the conversation here is going to be around no deal and trying to sort of fuddle your way through that on a daily basis, right? And or a second referendum, right, where you put it back to the people, trying to get a different result than what you got the first time. In other words, now that you know how much it's going to cost you, us as a country, do you still want to leave, right? And hoping that white people here stop being racist and using racism as a basis for their decision making, which I totally love. I love the fact that white people have voted with their hearts rather than their heads. Love it. Totally love it. And we'll come back to that in a moment, right? So that's really the two choices. No deal, right, or a second referendum. Because it's already been proven that MPs don't like Theresa May's deal. There is not going to be any deal that she's going to bring back that anyone's going to like. So it's going to be a second referendum or no deal. And both are mental. If there's a second referendum, then Theresa May's lost her job. It's as simple as that. Because, you know, she can't continue on past the second referendum. Makes no sense, right? So it's either she's going to step down or there's going to be another general election anyway. But what I love about white people at this point, you know, Gus, I think this is really interesting. And I think all non-white people worldwide should look at what's going on here. This proves that white people are happy to, sorry to use a metaphor, cut off their noses to spite their faces. You know, they're quite happy to do themselves down economically if it means they can get rid of non-white people. And I think that is amazing. So they're quite happy to spend loads of money, waste loads of money, have businesses that have been there. Jaguar, which is historically a brilliant British car-making company, right? Jaguar is selling up its factory here and leaving because of Brexit. You know, basically, men are losing their jobs here because this company, which used to be, I think it's owned by Ford now. I might be wrong, but I think Jaguar is now owned by Ford. I thought it was owned by a Japanese company. I think it's now owned by Ford. I think Ford are taking Jaguar, getting rid of their plant here. You know, this is big stuff. A historically fabled British car company, they are leaving, right? So white people are showing that they're happy to do whatever it takes, right, as long as they can get rid of non-white people. You know, and as long as the highest court is not the European court and they can mess around with black people's lives in the UK and send them all to prison or get rid of them. And that can actually be quite a powerful weapon in the hands of non-white people, you know, because that state of affairs actually can be brought about in any European country. And at the end of the day, I think that's going to be their downfall. Actually, that's what I really honestly believe. And what I believe we need to do as non-white people, as African people, African heritage people, is point out this particular fact to all non-white people, in particular African people, that Europeans are happy to do whatever it takes, even mess up their own economies, to get rid of us. Because that is exactly on that basis of immigration. That primarily is why white people vote for Brexit. That particular point. And we need to understand that, you know, not be like some of my family members who think that they're going to be all right. It's just the Eastern Europeans that they want out. No. It's to get all of us out or do all of us down and then mess around with all of our lives. We can't appeal to the highest European court. No, we're going to have to suck it up and go to their courts here. That is what it's all about. You know, but, you know, that's, I believe, honestly, economically anyway, it's going to be their downfall. And that's good for non-white countries, and it's good for African countries.
Context of white supremacy. The Jaguar company, from what I've seen online, it's now Jaguar Land Rover. That's the name of the company. They have branched away from Ford, it seems. Not that I'm someone who is an expert on vehicles, but it seems that Jaguar has merged. It's now Jaguar Land Rover, the Land Rover brand, and Jaguar, that they have merged to Jaguar Land Rover Limited. That's the brand that makes those cars. But yes, they're supposed to be based in the UK, and I do try to point out as many illustrations as possible of what Andrew just said. When whites, wherever in the world, for whatever reason, they value white supremacy, racism over everything else, money, whatever it is, if that means losing jobs, whatever it is, don't care, long as we have racism, white supremacy. I try to point those examples out. There's a book written by a white person who talks about how the healthcare system in the U.S. is really bad and that is horrible for a lot of white people. You saw that with what they call Obamacare. You have areas like Texas. NPR did a great report where they had white people in Texas who said there are droves of poor white people here who would hugely benefit from having Obamacare, might even add years to their life, but I can't vote for it because they don't like that nigga in the White House. That, this is on NPR. They were saying this is it specifically. There are tons of cases of this. I just try to point that out because many times they'll say, oh, it's class, it's money, there are other things that are more important. You're incorrect. All you have to do is study, what does it mean to be white? Mr. Fuller calls them the greatest mystery. Just study white people anywhere in the world and really pay attention. You will see what they value more than anything else, system of white supremacy, more than anything else. Also wanted, I will double check since things got all discombobulated. But I did also want to ask, did the case with Jasmine Barnes, the 7-year-old who was shot in Houston, Texas at the end of 2018, did that become international news? Did you all hear about that 7-year-old shooting, Texas?
I didn't hear about that. I did not hear about that, no.
Okay. Just curious. I didn't know how big of an event that became when there were reports that it was a white person who did the shooting. They've arrested two black people who they are now charging, but I didn't know if that was something that became big news in your part of the world as well. It always surprises me which stories become, because the shooting in, also in Texas with Amber Geiger, where that enforcement official went in and shot the black male in the apartment, you did hear about that one over there. You asked us for the update and everything. She's been charged and, you know, we'll wait on the trial, but shooting of a 7-year-old also in Texas, didn't hear about that one. Just strikes me as interesting. Let's see. I guess
what was that case all about then? What was that one all about?
The 7-year-old, I believe she was shot on December 30th. The way it was reported, and this is one that I've encouraged listeners to be mindful, to kind of research and see what how it unfolds, how it transpires. Jasmine Barnes was a 7-year-old black girl. She and her family, I think her mom and may have been several of her sisters, they went out very early in the morning on a Sunday before 7 a.m. I think they were going to the store. Drive-by shooting, she was shot and killed. I think several of her family members in the vehicle also were shot. Initial reports were that a white man in his 40s did this shooting. It was in a red truck of some sort. Some of the victims in the car said that they saw this white guy. They had a police sketch saying, you know, this is the suspect in the case. And so it was widely reported here for about a week or so that, you know, wow, a white guy might have went out and shot and killed this little black girl. And people saying that they think this could have been a hate crime and all of that. Then after a few days, they arrested a black male and said that, you know, it was a mistake. This white guy might have been there, but he didn't do the shooting, that it was a black male who did the shooting, and it was a case of mistaken identity, that he thought it was somebody else. And so they have since arrested two black males in this case. They are being charged with capital murder for this shooting. And the report that I played yesterday, the one of the black males, Eric Black Jr., he is saying that he did not participate in the shooting, and his lawyer is charging that the police have continued to interrogate his client when he has not been present, and he's left specific instructions that his client is not supposed to be talked to, interrogated when he's not present, and they've ignored his instructions. This is a black attorney, so no surprise that they've ignored his instructions and continue to interrogate the client, and they've been charged capital murder. But that's kind of where things are. And there was a lot of talk in the media about, you know, black people jumping to conclusions that a white person did this, and the police messed up, and race baiting and playing up racism when it's not there. And it was just more black on black crime and Negro hooliganism on a Sunday morning, that sort of thing. It's been, yeah, very interesting case. I would encourage folks to be mindful of, just keep an eye on for the rest of the year.
Okay. Okay. Yep. In-
Well, sure. With that, there was so much.
Oh, sorry. Come off that.
Thank you. With that, my apologies for the disruptions with the Skype lines. Like I said, I've never, in a decade of using Skype for the broadcast, I've never had a situation where not a single contact was lost, but it seems all of them, and having to go back and try to find and reconnect, and all of that was not part of the plan for today, but you navigate as best you can. Glad we were at least able to nab Andrew on the line with us. Would have been, I was hoping to hear from some of our other folks as well about particularly the Jaden Moody case, just as the man not, so many aspects of the man not, here we go again, the worthlessness of black boys and their criminals and all of that. You can check out some of the different reports that they have online. They even have one article talking about Jaden Moody, how he just had been excluded from school. I guess they suspended him or something because of some social media posts where he had a picture of himself up, and I guess it had some sort of drug paraphernalia or drug reference or what have you. So they suspended him from school. Exact same things that happened to black children here worldwide. Global system of racism, white supremacy. With that, unless, were you going to say
something? Yeah, sorry, Gus. All of that may or may not be true, you know, with the social media posts and all of that. You know, I mean, I've sat there and watched boys basically create personas on Facebook, right? And, you know, they just make, it's the same sort of thing as someone posing besides a Rolls Royce, you know, and putting that on Facebook and trying to convince the world that they're doing really, really well. Or, do you get what I mean? Like, it's the same sort of, people can create any persona they want. And kids do it, young people do it all the time on social media. But you said it really well earlier on, Gus. You know, if you want to justify a course of action, what you do, you create the circumstances, right, through which you know people are going to act a certain way to justify something you want to do anyway, right? And, you know, that's what people, I mean, that's what any conniving, nasty, powerful person's going to do. And that's what governments do. It's very, 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 very simple. Do you know what I mean? It's easy to do. You just basically chuck a bit of this in, chuck a bit of that in, take a bit of this out, take a bit of that out, and then just watch the fun. And you could do that for 15, 20 years, knowing full well, if it worked in certain, you know, one place in America over there, if it worked in Northern Ireland over there, if it worked in Brixton, you know, in 1975, if it worked in Peckham during this time period, you know full well it's going to work here. You just know it. And, that, you know, that's all it's about. And that's what these people do. That's what they've always done. And if it worked then, why won't it work now? You don't have to change your game. Do you know what I mean? So I don't care if this kid was a gang member. I don't care really if he put stuff on Facebook. All of that there is secondary, right, to what the government does and what they do. This is a kid. You've got grown men in the government. You've got grown women in the government, these white people, and they are the ones with the power. They are the ones in control. They are the ones that create circumstances and watch the fun. And those are the people who we should all be pointing our fingers at all the time, in my opinion.
Absolutely. That is easy to do in a system of domination when you control the schools, when you control whether or not people have access to clean water, when you control access to whether or not people have jobs. It's very easy. That's what whites, they brag and do those studies about. We already know by the time a child is five, we already know, you know, is this child going to jail? These are the percentages on whether or not this child is going to jail. These are the percentages on whether or not this child is going to graduate from college. They already know with a certain level of predictability, reliability on what the trajectory of this child's life could look like. And getting a little more information, they can be pretty accurate. That's what you can do in a system of white supremacy. That's what domination looks like. Also, just reminding folks, since this is our global Sunday talk, we'll be here Tuesday. Our guest from Norway, white woman, Ann Michelson. She is a teacher, no surprise there, white women run the classroom. But she uses the book, The Hate U Give. Now, we read that on the book club here at the time. I said that was the worst book I've ever read. It spent, I think, over 60 weeks, which is over a full calendar year, as the number one New York Times young adult novel. It was recently adapted for a major motion picture release. I think it made, you know, several million at the box office, had some big stars in it. But it's a wretched book. We talked about it in depth on the book club. This white woman thinks it's spectacular. She uses it in her class to teach her students about racism and how great black people are and why Black Lives Matter. I'm very eager for the chance to chat it up with her, as I would be for any white person who thinks that this is a good book in terms of its representation of black people and the worth of black life. Wow. And I will make sure, because I did say during the throughout the book club, like I think more than 10 times, that I'm not even sure that a black person actually did author this book. That's what they say. But it very much resonates with me as a project that I could see racists actually writing, ghostwriting, as they say. And then they just do some racial showcasing and attribute it to a black person so they can include whatever sort of racist content they want. And people do not scrutinize it a bit more closely. But she'll be here Tuesday from Norway. Ann Michelson, it's 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Central, 11 a.m. Pacific. Again, irregular time. She's in an irregular part of the world from where our normal guests call from. Looking forward to it. Global system of racism, white supremacy. Any other comments you wanted to get in, Andrew, before we get ready to wrap things up?
Yeah, could you repeat that, please, Gus?
Oh, just anything else that you wanted to mention, share with folks before we get ready to wrap things up?
Yeah, no, I think we said it all. I mean, it'd just be interesting, just ask everybody just to keep their eyes on the on what happens with this Brexit thing, and really just how it affects us as non-white people, in particular African people, how it affects us worldwide. What I like about it is the opportunities, or whether or not it does give us any opportunities as non-white people, as black people, as African people worldwide, particularly on the continent of Africa. You know, what opportunities this nonsense is going to give us, this disunity amongst whites, you know, and how, in what way, if any, can we exploit it? I'll leave it there.
We will definitely remain mindful. I think you did ask previously about how the shutdown, which is still ongoing at a month plus now, was affecting black people. And we've been asking. NPR had a report this week about the disproportionate effect on black people. They were talking about how black businesses, because you have a lot of independent contractors for the government who are not going to be compensated in all likelihood for this lost time, and how particularly for black businesses, they tend to be smaller and have fewer resources because of the system of racism, white supremacy. So those types of businesses, it could hit really hard. They might have to be laying people off, and just saying it would particularly put them in a real bind for the shutdown going on this long, at longer than a month at this point. And then we had a caller yesterday. Was it yesterday? It was within the last 2 days. We had programs the last 2 days. But a caller within the last 48 hours, she dialed in and she said that she was not specifically being impacted, but she was seeing how other people who are not even federal employees were being impacted because they had businesses in the Washington, D.C. area. She was saying, like, black people who had hair businesses and other businesses where they served black federal employees who are now being furloughed, they are not patronizing those businesses anymore. And so they are feeling the pinch, even though they are not federal employees. So I thought that was important as well, talking about how Black businesses and Black people are being impacted who don't even work for the government per se.
Yeah, no, thanks for that, Gus, because I've seen, because that's what I was looking for in the media as well, because, you know, we obviously get CNN here and various news outlets, but they did say that it's affecting normal, regular workers, and I just made the assumption, you know, this is going to be our people, basically, so it's interesting. How is it affecting support for Donald Trump? How is it affecting the support for him?
From what I've seen, or the reports that I've heard, they said that his supporters, the people that voted for him, his support is not eroding. This is what they want. They talk to some people who, you know, whatever. Even a lot of people that are upset. It's the same point. This would be another illustration of the exact thing that you just said. What is valued more than anything else is racism, white supremacy. All this talk about the wall was, hey, we have got raping dark people who are coming over here. We need to get the wall. That's what all of this is connected to directly anyway. So and he said his campaign promise wasn't that he was going to put a wall up. It was that he was going to make Mexico pay to put a wall up. Any other time, when I have heard white people, when they come out and they generally will say that that is a renege on a campaign promise, and that's a pretty big one to say that you're going to make somebody else pay for a wall, and then you turn around and say, oh, no, I want taxpayers to give me money to pay for it. That's the sort of thing that they just loop that in a commercial, like, oh, no, you're going to be a one-term president. Get out of here. I haven't heard that at all. Like, wait a minute. You said Mexico was going to repeatedly that Mexico was going to pay for the wall. Now we're at a shutdown. None of that. There are people who've hooted and hollered about the shutdown, and they're having to do this and going to the food bank, and they hate this, and why can't they get this problem resolved? I've even heard people who are upset with so-called Democrats saying that they should just give them the money to pay for the wall. But Mr. Trump is hanging tough, and in my view, he is still looking great for 4 more years, even though 2020 is a ways away. He is looking great for reelection, but I don't think it has eroded his support at all. I could be wrong, but yeah, I think he's doing fine.
Yeah, no. Thanks. No, sorry about that. Thanks for that. And it'd just be interesting just to watch what happens with it. That's it. Because, worldwide, I suppose, we just have to keep talking and figuring out ways to not let white behavior affect us. Do you get what I mean? You know, not make white behavior affect us, you know, and that's, going forward anyway, that's the key. I mean, that's why I like the mess that this Brexit thing is, because of what it does economically to this country, you know. And, you know, as European countries reduce, non-European countries increase. And that's important, you know, in my opinion, you know, so... So I suppose that works the same way for African communities worldwide as well. But it's the sad thing is it seems that Donald Trump is quite happy to do this because of who it affects. Because of who it affects. And you know, that's the key here, really, isn't it? Hello?
Sorry about that. I had myself muted. I was saying that there was a person who had a hand up. I was going to get their question or query. I didn't know if it was related to the shutdown or something else that had been touched on, but I went to get their line and then the call disappeared. So if you had dialed in and you wanted to get in a quick question, you can feel free to dial back and we'll nab your hand. We'll give you a quick moment or two. If not, oh, well, you can dial back. We will be back on in 2 days. You can dial back and share your comment or question in. But if you are with us and you still want to get your question in, we'll give you a few moments. Again, we'll be here on Tuesday. White woman, looking forward to discussing The Hate U Give. Workplace racism will be this Friday, and incidents in the life of a slave girl, Harriet Jacobs, session number 2, that'll be Thursday. normal times for those programs, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. I should be able to devote my Sunday afternoon to shoring up details for the 2010 yoga retreat for the Cows anniversary. Hopefully we can get all that nailed down and then send out our emails, communiques with everyone. To give them all of the details if you're interested in joining us in Jackson, Tennessee. With that, we'll assume that they are good, and we'll get them, person who dialed in, we'll get their query for next time. If you had a hand up, I thought I had looked to see if folks had a hand. I saw callers, but I didn't see I guess I didn't even give folks the chance to ask questions. I should have done that earlier. My bad. I told you I got discombobulated with the contacts not being there and so on. But I did see the hands. My apologies for not being quicker to get to folks who dialed in. We will do better for Tuesday. With that, thanks to Andrew. We'll be looking forward to having more of our folks back with us for February Global Sunday Talk. Next month. With that, much obliged to the folks for tuning in. Hope it was worthy of your time and energy this Sunday evening or afternoon or wherever you happen to be at in the world. Remain constructive. We have too many problems to waste time. With that, sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism, and that is anywhere in the world. The war of white terrorism is being waged against us. I think we would be best served to be sober as we move about and just trying to make quality decisions so that we can keep ourselves as safe as possible under extraordinarily dangerous conditions. In addition to being sober every single time we're in a vehicle, let's also make sure that we're buckled up, driver or passenger, anywhere in the world. Jaden Moody, obviously, it is unsafe for black people anywhere being out on the road. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. Let's be buckled up, and let's not be on the phone either. I don't know if that is a thing, like, internationally, the ticketing people for being on the phone, distracted driving, as they say, but I know it is a big thing here in the States, and I know non-white people, that has been justification for them being pulled over. So put the phone down, focus on the road. Focus on solving the problem of white supremacy racism. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cows signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.